You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me tonight as sidecar is Elliot Serrano, who began his holiday vacation. And I'm so glad that you're spending the first few hours with us on the air.
I'm glad. I'm very nice to be in the room with the men who are personally responsible for the downfall of current society.
Is that what it is? Is it Ken Jacobowski? Eric Elk and Dave Lundy?
We did our best.
I find all of them to be level-headed, to have varied points of view. Great conversation. We're trying to come up with a title for this segment, Esmeralda, and I think it's got to be now. Is it What Now or Now What? Now What?
I thought, what was it before?
I can't remember what we tried calling it.
Something
one
about.
I think we should ask the listeners. They should name the segment.
Well, they should suggest names for the segment.
Yeah, I don't know.
Then we're going to get Bodie McBoatface like they did with that icebreaker.
Esmeralda, what did you remember?
Wasn't it something about puppets or like...
It was something about...
Something
was
silly.
Was it puppets on a treadmill?
Something like that.
Yeah, no. We're
a puppet.
We're heading in the wrong direction.
312-981-7200, because it's not necessarily politics. It's about what's happening. I mean, politics is more about having the discussion about what your philosophy is politically. This, talking about Trump filling out his cabinet, that's current events.
It's current events. It's governing.
Governing.
We'll see how the governing goes. Haven't been doing a lot of governing in this country or in the state for a long time.
I love how your voice often drips with so much sarcasm that I have to get a cup to catch it.
I can't believe you would say that, Patty. Nobody's ever accused me of being sarcastic.
The cup runneth over.
Even your posts, you're very good. You are concise and precise with what you want to say.
I try, but I think the sarcasm has come through in my pokes in response to the governor's people attacking my friend J.B. Pritzker. I've been a little. I know I'm foreshadowing.
You already went to local. What, Eric?
Attacking.
Well, actually, J.B. was he national finance chair for Hillary Clinton?
He was not national finance chair for Hillary. There was no national finance chair for Hillary. He was her top fundraiser.
He was her top fundraiser. So it's national, but yet it's with a local twist.
We're jumping ahead, but Pritzker is thinking about running for governor. Are we now going to be a country led by billionaires? Is that where we're? Is that the only solution now?
Well, sadly, in this state, given that the governor put like $100 million into campaigns in the last cycle when he wasn't even running for governor, just in terms of supporting other folks.
And not even just in the state of Illinois. He was funding campaigns in Indiana as well.
I'm focusing on his Illinois stuff. There was a lot.
Can we talk about the speaker giving all of his candidates money?
Did he?
Yes.
Well, actually, it was the labor unions that gave the speaker's candidates money. The speaker gave his candidates some money, but compared to Rauner, it was a drop in the bucket. But yes,
Elliot, do you have a chart for where all the money's going and coming from? The labor unions, Rauner, Indiana, also Pritzker. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot of finger pointing going on too.
It's a lot of. And
Trump, about your guy. Your guy did that.
Just clean house. That's where I'm at. Just clean house.
The entire the capital of Illinois.
I'd like to see leadership on both sides gone. That's my view.
Okay.
So you agree with the fire Madigan?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, how do you fire Madigan?
And fire Cullerton and get rid of Rauner, done nothing.
They all have a choice. What, January 11th?
Yeah, but the choice isn't the only other choice is Durkin. They're not. I mean, it's either Madigan or Durkin, is my understanding.
There are other Democrats that are in the majority party.
But you have to have enough votes.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
No, it's just like Nancy Pelosi at the national level.
She's got a good run for her money.
She's been there a long time. It's time for a change. Same thing in Illinois. Really, we need new blood. At the top.
By the way, did you catch what Eric Elk just said there?
No, what did he say?
She said she got a good run for her money. You had to pick up on the money.
Her husband's money, if I remember right.
She was given a good run.
That was not going to change, was it? Pelosi was still going to be, that was kind of written in stone, wasn't it? Because we talked about...
I bet this is the last go-around for her.
I don't know. We said that before. Look, we have leadership challenges. We have leadership challenges on both sides of the aisle, in Illinois.
And nationally.
We've had bench problems on the Democratic side, not having a strong enough bench. I mean, look, the Republicans thought they had a phenomenal bench. They had 17 candidates, and they picked a guy who wasn't on the bench. So,
and didn't Jeb Bush just come out in support of the whatever the environmental plans
Pruitt.
Are?
Yeah, he came out in support of the anti-EPA, anti-climate change EPA EPA director nominee.
Okay. Which is a good segue.
Yes, into I know. See,
what
we
has been
there?
Happening yes, last you,
you
two
that,
to three
you
weeks.
You think that I was just dilly dallying? I actually had a purpose for bringing up Jeb Bush.
You did.
There was a method to
well,
the
madness. You know, the interesting thing so far. Mm-hmm. I think, as we've talked about before on this show, judge the president elect not on what he says, but on what he does. And what he's done so far is he's picked some advisors and he's filled out. I think has he filled out all of his cabinet or most of it?
Most of it.
What are we waiting for?
Somebody who's not a white man?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. That wasn't your question.
No. Because we'll wait until hell freezes over.
He's got to do, I think he's got to do ag. He's got interior. He's got
no, I think he
USTR,
named interior.
The trade rep.
Right.
I was trying to think if I knew the names of any of the secretaries.
Yeah,
of those
no, he named interior.
Now.
Ryan Zinke.
Oh, yeah, from Montana or something.
Well, what's interesting about the folks that he's appointed is there are a couple of them that remind me of James Watt, if you remember James Watt under Reagan.
Wow.
Was he Secretary of Interior?
He was Interior, and he is famous for saying, what's the problem? I got a black woman, two Jews, and a cripple.
Doing what?
On his commission.
Really?
But he was attacked for diversity issues, and that was his response. I got a black
you still
woman
have to name the VA
from a policy perspective. James Watt basically wanted to open up even the national parks to drilling, if possible. So not somebody you would think would you know my view of a Secretary of Interior is someone who would protect the nation's parks, who would protect the interior.
Yeah, but I don't think people see it that way. Everything's up for grabs.
Well, Trump has done the same. I mean, right. Trump has a Secretary of Labor who's against the $15 minimum wage.
He's against minimum wages.
Minimum wages, period. He's against overtime. I mean, that's not labor. And you would think that the folks in the WGN Great Listening audience who voted for Donald Trump, you would think that they would have... But they would be in favor of increased minimum wage, and they would want someone to help further expansion of overtime.
The platform was never to raise minimum wage. The platform was to bring jobs back to America. So presumably that's what he's saying. You know, was this guy in charge of McDonald's? That was previously, that's what he does now?
Carl's.
This Carl is Jr. Andrew Puzder. Oh. Yeah, Carl's yeah. Jr. and
he's Hardy's. The guy who had all the scantily clad women with the soap suds and the cars eating hamburgers.
Those are marketing ads. Genius.
Yeah, that was quite effective. I wanted a Carl's burger after that.
And one of those cars. Wasn't it always like a girl like rubbing up against the car?
Hot woman, hot car.
Washing the car.
I want a burger right now.
Just shoving a burger in your face. No. I don't know how we went from
you ever
from
had a
minimum
Carl's
wage.
Jr. burger?
I've had
really
an In-N-Out burger.
Really not Carl's, impressive.
Carl's.
They're not so good. They're overhyped.
Well, what they had at Carl's when I was out there last year was bacon shakes. Live there for a moment as we come back. 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Elliot, is it still Wednesday? I think it's still Wednesday, isn't it?
It's Wednesday for another 5 minutes.
Unless you're in other parts of...
This is today.
Oh, I
For
must...
another 5 minutes.
The longest day?
Yes.
Or the shortest day, rather.
Oh, my God.
The
shortest day, but that means that from now on, it's only going to get brighter for six more months.
That's right. I think from we're 3 seconds. The day is 3 seconds longer, I think, in Chicago tomorrow.
I just remembered something very important. Now I have to call my husband. You all continue on. I forgot. This is the day my husband proposed to me in 1999.
Whoa.
Yeah. In December. The winter solstice. He proposed to me on the winter solstice.
Oh, that's
cool. Yeah.
One, two, three.
Oh, thank you.
On the longest night of the year.
It's going to be a long life. It was symbolic, I believe.
A long, dark life.
We're talking off the air a little bit about some of the choices Donald Trump has made for his cabinet. And something that came up was that he's making choices based on appearances. What did he say about John Bolton? Or what are his thoughts on John Bolton as a...
there was a story that came out that basically said that John Bolton was disqualified from running for becoming Secretary of State because of the mustache, his big hairy furry mustache, and he thinks that people should look
say hairy and furry again. I like the way his big hairy and furry
big
mustache,
hairy furry mustache, and that he thought that people should look the part. And apparently these consensus of folks inside the transition team is like, look, if you want to nominate somebody who doesn't look the part, forget about it. Donald will never go for it. It's all about the aesthetic,
which makes it's perfectly consistent with who he is.
With who he is.
He's a brand
he's
genius,
gotta, yeah,
and
he's gotta sell this.
He wants people who can look the part, act the part, dress the part, and who can who know how to deal with media.
And that's what a lot of voters have really sought. That's why they voted for Donald Trump. They wanted the appearance of somebody who will be presidential and do the things that they want, right? And there are plenty of people who don't like Michael Bolton. I mean, what's his name? John Bolton.
Him too.
No, John Bolton's mustache. You know what? I actually don't like John Bolton's mustache.
I don't like it either.
I actually don't like John Bolton's policies. But
well, there's that's a whole package.
And I have no problem with facial hair, just to be clear.
Well, that facial hair, it's hard for me to get past.
It's just that it's attached to John Bolton.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe Donald Trump is using it as an excuse.
Just imagine what John Bolton would look like. It's too bad this isn't a TV show, because you know somebody with Photoshop should like take John Bolton's mustache, remove it, and you know.
Can we do a makeover for John Bolton?
Absolutely.
And see if he's appealing then to Donald Trump?
Then when Tillerson's rejected, he can go for Bolton. Wait, no, that's bad.
That's awesome.
Well, in the Washington Post, the picture of Bolton that accompanies the article, it does not do him any favors. It's a picture of him in Trump Tower by the elevators, and he just does not look.
Well, do you remember when Donald Trump was going after Kasich and the way he was eating? Remember, he was like, "Oh, it was disgusting. You should see." I told my children, "You never want to see anyone eat like that." Never.
Well, remember, we went through after women who were breast pumping in the office the same way.
Did he really?
Oh yeah, yeah. There were women who told these stories during the campaign about how this one woman lawyer. Who was deposing Donald Trump in one of his many, many, many lawsuits. And she said she had to take a break because she had to go pump.
Right.
And Donald Trump launches into this attack, and this is all captured, about how that was disgusting. Oh, my God. How could you do that? That's revolting. And
well, do you know what the alternative is if a woman doesn't pump while she's lactating? I wonder what he would have thought of that.
It's, well, right. But, yeah, no, I'm with you, Patty. Just to be clear, I'm with you. I'm not saying it's disgusting. I'm saying that Donald Trump's did. And yet people voted for him, so go figure.
See, and that's it's bizarre where people's sensibilities are, isn't it? You know, the things that he's disgusted by are women pumping breast milk and big hairy mustaches.
Yes.
But not apparently disgusted by
very, very close ties to Russia.
Yeah, well, there's that. So I just want to figure out where the bar is. Where
or Nazis or David Duke or, you know, anything else.
Or grabbing your cat.
Or grabbing your other things.
Yeah. I like how Eric had to think about that. Do you think about that for a second, or are you trying to decide if it was almost too pleasant to call it a cat?
I was going to comment and held my tongue.
No, there you go.
Okay. But I don't understand the tie to Russia. What are you talking about?
Does he have any ties to Russia?
You know, it's funny. So Donald Trump has denied, since being elected, that his campaign ever had any contact with the Russians.
And he said that, why are people bringing up the Russians influencing the election? They didn't say anything before. I believe, if I recall, during a debate, it was very clearly spoken.
Yes, in fact, I believe it was a debate when we were sitting here in the studio watching the debate on television.
No, you're a puppet.
Right,
no,
exactly. Puppet. Yes, it was the you're a puppet debate.
Well, here, I'm a puppet. I have to push this button. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me tonight as sidecar is Elliot Serrano, who began his holiday vacation. And I'm so glad that you're spending the first few hours with us on the air.
I'm glad. I'm very nice to be in the room with the men who are personally responsible for the downfall of current society.
Is that what it is? Is it Ken Jacobowski? Eric Elk and Dave Lundy?
We did our best.
I find all of them to be level-headed, to have, varied points of view. Great conversation. We're trying to come up with a title for this segment, Esmeralda, and I think it's got to be now. Is it what now or now what? Now what?
I thought, what was it before?
I can't remember what we tried calling it
something
one day.
Something about
I think we should ask the listeners. They should name the segment.
Well, they should suggest names for the segment.
Yeah, I don't
then
know.
We're going to get Bodie McBoatface like they did with that icebreaker.
Esmeralda, what did you remember?
Wasn't it something about puppets or like...
It was something about...
Something
was
silly.
Was it puppets on a treadmill?
Something like that.
Yeah, no. We're
a puppet.
We're heading in the wrong direction.
312-981-7200, because it's not necessarily politics. It's about what's happening. I mean, politics is more about having the discussion about what your philosophy is politically. This, talking about Trump filling out his cabinet, that's current events.
It's current events. It's governing.
Governing.
We'll see how the governing goes. Haven't been doing a lot of governing in this country or in the state for a long time.
I love how your voice often drips with so much sarcasm that I have to get a cup to catch it.
I can't believe you would say that, Patty. Nobody's ever accused me of being
the
sarcastic.
The cup runneth over.
Even your posts, you're very good at you are concise and precise with what you want to say. And
well, I try, but I think the sarcasm has come through in my pokes in response to the governor's people attacking my friend J.B. Pritzker. I've been a little. I know I'm foreshadowing.
You already went to local. What, Eric?
Attacking.
Well, actually, J.B. was he national finance chair for Hillary Clinton?
He was not national finance chair for Hillary. There was no national finance chair for Hillary. He was her top fundraiser.
So it's national, but yet it's with a local twist.
We're jumping ahead, but Pritzker is thinking about running for governor. Are we now going to be a country led by billionaires? Is that where we're? Is that the only solution now?
Well, sadly, in this state, given that the governor put like $100 million into campaigns in the last cycle when he wasn't even running for governor, just in terms of supporting other folks.
And not even just in the state of Illinois. He was funding campaigns in Indiana as well.
I'm focusing on his Illinois stuff. There was a lot.
Can we talk about the speaker giving all of his candidates money?
Did he?
Yes.
Well, actually, it was the labor unions that gave the speaker's candidates money. The speaker gave his candidates some money, but compared to Rauner, it was a drop in the bucket. But yes,
Elliot, do you have a chart for where all the money's going and coming from? The labor unions, Rauner, Indiana, also Pritzker. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot of finger pointing going on too.
Your guy
did that.
Just clean house. That's where I'm at. Just clean house.
The entire capital of Illinois.
I'd like to see leadership on both sides gone. That's my view.
Okay.
So you agree with the fire Madigan?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, how do you fire Madigan?
And fire Cullerton and get rid of Rauner.
They all have a choice. What, January 11th?
Yeah, but the choice isn't the only other choice is Durkin. They're not. I mean, it's either Madigan or Durkin, is my understanding.
There are other Democrats that are in the majority
party. But you have to have enough votes.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
No, it's just like Nancy Pelosi at the national level.
She's got a good run for her money.
She's been there a long time. It's time for a change. Same thing in Illinois. Really, we need new blood at the top.
By the way, did you catch what Eric Elk just said there?
No, what did he say?
He said she got a good run for her money. You had to pick up on the money. It's all
well, actually, it was her husband's money, if I remember right.
She was given a good run.
Yeah, yeah, that was not going to change, was it? Pelosi was still going to be, that was kind of written in stone, wasn't it? Because we talked about
I bet this is the last go-around for her.
I don't know. We said that before. Look, we have leadership challenges. We have leadership challenges on both sides of the aisle, in Illinois.
And nationally.
And we've had bench problems on the Democratic side, not having a strong enough bench. I mean, look, the Republicans thought they had a phenomenal bench. They had 17 candidates, and they picked a guy who wasn't on the bench.
And didn't Jeb Bush just come out in support of the whatever the environmental plans
Pruitt.
Are?
Yeah, he came out in support of the anti-EPA, anti-climate change EPA EPA director nominee.
Okay. Which is a good segue.
Yes, I know. See,
what
we
has
did
been
there?
Happening yes. last yes.
You,
you two or three
that, you
weeks.
You think that I was just dilly-dallying. I actually had a purpose for bringing up Jeb Bush.
You did?
There was a method to the madness.
The interesting thing so far, mm-hmm. I think as we've talked about before on this show, judge the president-elect not on what he says, but on what he does. And what he's done so far is he's picked some advisors and he's filled out, has he filled out all of his cabinet or most of it?
Most of it.
What are we waiting for?
Somebody who's not a white man?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. That wasn't your question.
No. Because we'll wait until hell freezes over.
Yeah. He's got to do, I think he's got to do ag. He's got interior. He's got
no, I think he
USTR.
Named interior.
the trade rep.
Right.
I was trying to think if I knew the names of any of the secretaries.
Yeah,
of
no, he named Interior,
now.
Ryan Zinke.
Oh, yeah, from Montana or
something. What's interesting about the folks that he's appointed is there are a couple of them that remind me of James Watt, if you remember James Watt under Reagan.
Wow.
He was he Secretary of Interior?
He was Interior, and he is famous for saying, what's the problem? I got a black, a Jew, two, or a black, a woman, two Jews, and a cripple.
Doing what?
On his commission.
Some commission.
Oh, really?
But he was attacked for diversity issues, and that was his response. I got a black
still
woman
have to
two
name
Jews.
The VA.
From a policy perspective, James Watt basically wanted to open up even the national parks to drilling, if possible. So not somebody you would think would you know my view of a Secretary of Interior is someone who would protect the nation's parks, who would protect the interior.
Yeah, but I don't think people see it that way. Everything's up for grabs.
Well, Reagan's done, or Reagan, Trump has done the same. I mean, Trump has a Secretary of Labor who's against the $15 minimum wage.
He's against minimum wages.
Minimum wages, period. He's against overtime. I mean, that's not labor. And you would think that the folks in the WGN Great Listening audience who voted for Donald Trump, you would think that they would have... But they would be in favor of increased minimum wage, and they would want someone to help further expansion of overtime.
But the platform was never to raise minimum wage. The platform was to bring jobs back to America. So is that presumably that's what he's saying? You know, was this guy in charge of McDonald's? That was previously. That's what he does now.
Carl's.
Oh, Carl's.
This is Andrew Puzder. Yeah, Carl's Jr. and
he's the guy who had all the scantily clad women with the soap suds and the cars eating hamburgers.
Those are marketing ads. Genius.
Yeah, quite effective. I wanted a Carl's burger after that.
And one of those cars. Wasn't it always like a girl like rubbing up against the car?
Hot woman, hot car.
Washing the car.
I want a burger right now.
And just shoving a burger in your face. No. I don't know how we went from
you ever
from
had a Carl's
wage.
Jr. burger?
I've had an In-N-Out burger.
Really not impressive.
They're not so good. They're overhyped.
Well, what they had at Carl's when I was out there last year was bacon shakes. Live there for a moment as we come back. 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Elliot, is it still Wednesday? I think it's still Wednesday, isn't it?
It's Wednesday for another 5 minutes.
Unless you're in other parts of...
This is today.
Oh, I'm...
For another 5 minutes. Oh,
the longest day?
Yes.
Or the shortest day, rather.
Oh, my God.
Shortest day, but that means that from now on, it's only going to get brighter for six more months.
That's right. I think the day is 3 seconds longer, I think, in Chicago tomorrow.
I just remembered something very important. Now I have to call my husband. You all continue on. I forgot. This is the day my husband proposed to me in 1999.
Whoa.
Yeah, in December. The winter solstice. He proposed to me on the winter solstice.
Oh, that's
cool. Yeah. I just,
wait, 1, 2, 3.
Aw, thank you.
On the longest night of the year. What are you trying to say?
It's going to be a long life. It was symbolic, I believe.
A long, dark life.
We're talking off the air a little bit about some of the choices Donald Trump has made for his cabinet. And something that came up was that he's making choices based on appearances. What did he say about John Bolton? Or what is it? What are his thoughts on
John Bolton as a... The story that came out that basically said that John Bolton was disqualified from running for becoming Secretary of State because of the mustache, his big hairy furry mustache, and he thinks that people should look
say hairy and furry again. I like the
hairy,
way his big hairy and furry
big
mustache,
hairy furry mustache, and that he thought that people should look the part, and apparently these. Consensus of folks inside the transition teams, like, look, if you want to nominate somebody who doesn't look the part, forget about it. Donald will never go for it. It's all about the aesthetic.
Which makes it perfectly consistent with who he is.
He's a brand genius, and he
wants people who can look the part, act the part, dress the part, and who know how to deal with media.
And that's what a lot of voters have really saw it. That's why they voted for Donald Trump. They wanted the appearance of somebody who will be presidential and do the things that they want, right? And there are plenty of people who don't like Michael Bolton. I mean, what's his name? John Bolton.
Him too.
No, John Bolton's mustache. You know what? I actually don't like John Bolton's mustache.
I don't like it either.
I actually don't like John Bolton's policies. But
well, there's that's a whole package.
And I have no problem with facial hair, just to be clear.
Well, that facial hair, it's hard for me to get past.
It's just that it's attached to John Bolton.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe Donald Trump is using as an excuse.
Just imagine what John Bolton would look like. It's just too bad this isn't a TV show, because you know somebody with Photoshop should like take John Bolton's mustache, remove it, and you know.
Can we do a makeover for John Bolton?
Absolutely.
And see if he's appealing then to Donald Trump?
Then when Tillerson's rejected, he can go for Bolton. Wait, no, that's bad.
That's awesome.
Well, in the Washington Post, the picture of Bolton that accompanies the article, it does not do him any favors. It's a picture of him in Trump Tower by the elevators, and he just does not look.
Well, do you remember when?
The part.
Do you remember when Donald Trump was going after Kasich and the way he was eating? Remember, he was like, "Oh, it was disgusting. You should see." I told my children, "You never want to see anyone eat like that." Never.
Well, remember, we went through after women who were breast pumping in the office the same way.
Did he really?
Oh yeah, yeah. There were women who told these stories during the campaign about how this one woman lawyer. Who was deposing Donald Trump in one of his many, many, many lawsuits. And she said she had to take a break because she had to go pump.
Right.
And Donald Trump launches into this attack, and this is all captured about how that was disgusting. Oh, my God. How could you do that? That's revolting. And
well, do you know what the alternative is if a woman doesn't pump while she's lactating? I wonder what he would have thought of that.
It's, well, right. But, yeah, no, I'm with you, Patty. Just to be clear, I'm with you. I'm not saying it's disgusting. I'm saying that Donald Trump's did. And yet people voted for him, so go figure.
See, and that's it's bizarre where people's sensibilities are, isn't it? You know, the things that he's disgusted by are women pumping breast milk and big hairy mustaches.
Yes.
But not apparently disgusted by
very,
racism.
Very close ties to Russia.
Yeah, well, there's that. Yeah. I just want to figure out where the bar is. Where
or Nazis or David Duke or, you know, anything else.
Or grabbing your cat.
Or grabbing your other things.
Yeah. I like how Eric had to think about that. Do you think about that for a second, or are you trying to decide if it was almost too pleasant to call it a cat?
I was going to comment and held my tongue.
No, there you go. Okay.
But I don't understand the tie to Russia. What are you talking about?
Does he have any ties to Russia?
You know, it's funny. So Donald Trump has denied, since being elected, his campaign ever had any contact with the Russians.
And he said that, why are people bringing up the Russians influencing the election? They didn't say anything before. I believe, if I recall, during a debate, it was very clearly spoken.
Yes, in fact, I believe it was a debate when we were sitting here in the studio watching
the
debate on television.
No, you're a puppet.
Right,
no,
exactly. Puppet. Yes, it was the you're a puppet debate.
Well, here, I'm a puppet. I have to push this button. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Okay, we're gonna change topics for just a moment, because Dave Lundy has really been raring to talk about Rogue One, and Elliot Serrano saw it on Monday. Monday with the critics, so he saw it.
What'd you think, Elliot?
Well, first of all, I know that Ken Jacobowski wanted to know what Rogue One is.
I have no idea. And I never saw Star Wars. I've not seen Rogue One. I just, those types of movies.
Ken Jacobowski wanted to know what Yoda was.
Are you Russian?
Oh,
no, I'm not Russian. I am a spy. Yes. Hold on.
I thought I knew this man. This man is a friend of mine. I thought I knew him.
These sorts of movies I have zero interest in. I really.
But you were a young man when Star Wars came out. Not that you're an older man. I was a kid.
I was a Star Trek person, and I felt that I honestly remember thinking that Star Wars simply was ripping off Star Trek.
I don't even see how that's like. No. That would be like saying like some cop drama, like some like Absence of Malice was ripping off. I don't even know what the. I'm trying to think of like comparisons.
I did see
Absence of Malice. I love that movie.
It's a great movie. I don't know why it popped into my head, but
one
Paul
of my
Newman.
Favorite movies.
It's a brilliant movie.
In fact, Ken, you and I have talked about Absence of Malice a lot. With Chief
is a spectacular film. There's no question.
Yeah. It's the same as Time to Kill. I don't know. think of another with drama.
Paul with Paul Newman. And
that's
if you
amazing.
Have not, if you have not
Sally
seen
Field.
It, rent it in Sally Field. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. It really is a great film.
And Bob Balaban.
Yes.
Yes. Bob Balaban's in there.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know how we got from Star Wars to Absence of Malice. He's saying you can't have a sci-fi movie, and there's a difference. Actually, Star Wars is a fantasy movie, I contend, not sci-fi.
I don't like fantasy movies. That's just me. Honestly, I avoid them like the plague.
Then that would make
I like
sense,
real
then.
Movies. I don't like...
Likes you know. Real movies.
Yeah, I just don't like
for
movies.
Real men.
I don't like fantasy movies. I like movies with heart and meat. I don't like movies that...
So no superhero movies?
No, zero. Never. Would never go.
And that makes sense.
Total waste of time.
So wait, let me get this straight. You like fantasy movies with meat?
Wait. Anyway. No. He likes fictional movies with meat.
Oh, fictional movies with meat.
Like Absence of Malice.
Like
Absence
of Malice.
Absence of Malice.
Yeah. Sausage Party.
Or Allied, which I saw recently.
I've not
Allied
seen it.
Was very good.
Okay, so Star Wars, I saw that movie, and I was so impressionable. But I was a kid, and I saw it at the Gateway Theater. Did you ever go there? The ceiling is actually stars.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
So they kind of sparkle. But the movie opens, and you're in space, and there's stars. So for me as a kid, it was like this sort of immersive experience.
So for the first Star Wars.
The first Star Wars.
The Star Wars.
I saw it at the Eden's Theater.
Did
me
you
too.
Really?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How funny. Yeah. Elliot, where did you see Star Wars your first time?
I saw it at the Logan.
See?
Yeah.
Actually, my first time was in Colorado. I was on a vacation, on a ski vacation with my family, 1977. I believe it was right before or right after I broke my wrist, and we went to the local theater and saw Star Wars.
That was how you were healing? Esmeralda, have you've seen Star Wars?
I have, but, you know, at home. Never at the theater.
That's okay. She's all, at home.
I was a baby.
Did you
when
enjoy
the first
it?
Ones came out, so.
Did you enjoy Star Wars?
Yeah. I mean,
you don't sound convinced.
It's not. I enjoy it as like, oh, look at the Wookiee and all that, and the tiny little bears. What are they? The Ewoks. But yeah, I saw the Force Awakens. That's the one before this new one,
mm-hmm.
And it was good. But I wasn't like, oh my gosh, I have to. I watched halfway and then I had to go do something, and then I never picked it up again.
She was done.
But see, that'll happen if you watch a movie like that at home.
That's true. It's sort of something you pick up and quit. Dan, where'd you see the Star Wars for the first time?
I was at my house, I think. I saw it on VHS.
Oh, see? There you go.
Yeah, see, for those of us who are older, Star Wars was like a revelation.
Oh,
so I'm the only one that has not that has never seen these movies. How about that?
I'm sure there are listeners right now,
you know,
in our WGN family.
Who are mocking Ken.
Have also not seen it.
No, who are mocking Ken.
I'm beginning to wonder, you know, he is denying it so vociferously. I bet you if we went to your house, you've got Star Wars posters.
No.
You've got like the life. You've got like the entire original, like the early bird special Star Wars action figure collections and the cardboard packaging.
Star Wars underwear.
Star Wars underoos.
No, I do not.
he does not. No.
Wow.
No, I actually, honestly, I don't. I've tried to get into these sorts of movies, especially the superhero movies, but I just they do nothing. They really do nothing for me. But I also read nonfiction books. Only in the last 7 or 8 years have I started to read fiction books.
Right.
Well, like Newt Gingrich's stuff?
Well, and the thing about Star Wars, and Griffin and I have this conversation because he goes, what's your favorite Star Wars movie? And mine is Star Wars. And he says, do you mean A New Hope? And I'm like, I don't know what you're saying to me.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's the Star Wars. And I'm like, it's called Star Wars. And then
number
like,
four.
Whatever.
Episode
it's,
four.
Okay, stop
yeah, for
it.
For me, that was number one.
So, okay, so what is Rogue One?
So Rogue One.
That was my point about New Hope, is that they all have these different titles. They're all Star Wars movies, but then they have
they
a secondary title.
Yes, yeah. They're all different in chronology. So this Rogue One actually takes place right before the original Star Wars from 1977. In fact, they made this movie. It ends just as it ends. If you watched
immediately before the original Star
Hope
Wars
starts,
begins,
like it ends with. The Tantive IV, the ship escaping
Captain
from
Antilles'
the Empire,
ship, exactly
taking off, and you see why Darth Vader is chasing them in A New Hope. This is a movie that my dad would have loved because I remember when he took me to see Star Wars as a kid, he said he hated the fact that the movie began like in the middle of the story. He hated is called in medias res, right? When you start in the middle of the story, my dad always...
You throw away the first 10 pages of the story you were telling, right. And you just go, this is where it happens.
Right. And yep. then, but he hated that. So I wish he had been around to say, I go, Dad, look, it's that part that you hated that you missed. Now they've made a movie to kind of like address that, but you know, not. I mean, people are talking about how it's the greatest movie ever. I don't agree.
Yeah, it's not the greatest movie ever, but yeah. but it was an absolute solid Star Wars movie. It's better than The Force Awakens, in my opinion, because I thought that was kind of a mediocre movie.
Okay, now I'm gonna start throwing stuff.
I had so much fun watching the Force Awakens. I really did. My mom hated it.
Yeah.
My mom, I didn't know this. My mom has only seen Star Wars. She never saw Empire or Jedi.
Yeah,
she goes, I saw what all
was,
I needed
was
to
Star
see.
Wars was the first movie.
Correct.
When was Jedi? Was that the second?
That's
third.
No, third.
And when
third.
Did that come out?
In
that
like 81?
Yeah. And what was
no,
the second?
No, it was 83.
Empire Strikes Back.
The movies were coming out every 3 years.
Okay,
it was
that makes sense.
Seven, Empire in 80, 80 Jedi in 83.
I saw.
And Rogue One is the fourth?
No,
well,
God,
Ken.
That's what I was trying to go
prequel.
Back and tell you. Yeah,
Ken, go back to whatever that country you came from where you don't watch Star Wars.
Okay.
You're not an American.
Let me see. Yes, Esmeralda?
Wait, I find a problem that he just kind of throws away the Star Wars movies. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan ever, but I'm not like, oh, whatever, they don't have heart. When, if you think about it, I mean, they're all about war and all these different topics. It just so happens that, they're, you know, they're in space. And they're
yeah,
in a
just,
whole different
I,
place.
I've
yeah,
tried. I just,
and,
I have to say, the one movie, I have seen one movie, and it was a Superman, the very first Superman movie. I remember
Reeves.
I went and saw that. Yes.
And did you like think? That one?
Yeah. I remember I went and saw it. It was on a Christmas day. It came out. I thought it was good. I enjoyed it. I remember that. I like it.
See, but I think that Star Wars has a more... You down know, to earth.
Yes.
You know what we need to show him? We need to show him The Phantom Menace. Why? That one was full of politics. That's what you need.
Yeah, but it's a horrendous
yeah.
movie.
I hate
yeah,
all those movies.
Yeah, but it talks about. I mean,
it has the worst character ever created
deception,
in movies.
There's chicanery. There's political maneuvering. All that stuff.
Misa, suppose you're crazy.
Yeah. And Jar Jar deleted how many
oh,
emails?
Oh, God.
So you would love that movie.
Seriously? A guy deletes emails in Star Wars movie? No.
That's really funny.
Patty, you should do a film series.
A film series
show
of?
Him all the Star Wars.
So, but, make Ken Jacobowski watch all the
yeah,
Star
exactly.
Wars movies.
Yeah,
oh, that would
exactly.
Be,
so well, the thing about Rogue One, though, that I was a little weird. So for those of us, unlike Ken, who've seen these movies, what they used old footage from the original Star Wars movies
to bring back
to bring
characters,
back certain
yeah.
characters. So you had Red Leader and Gold Leader, and these guys are the same guys who you will see in the Star Wars movie. Mm-hmm. But that was okay because those were actual films of actual actors. And then they brought back some characters from the dead.
Should you mention this? Are you going to be ruining the movie if you mention?
No, this has been pretty widely publicized.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
No. I thought about whether it's a spoiler, but no, they bring certain characters literally back from the dead. And I don't mean like
dead.
They died in yeah. the movies. I mean the actors have been dead for decades, and they recreate them through CGI, through you know computer generated imagery and voice. And I got to tell you, the first time because we know the timeline and it's about the Death Star, so people could probably guess. The first time Governor Tarkin, played by the late great British actor Peter Cushing, came on the screen and started, you know, voicing live new dialogue, it was just like, oh, that's creepy.
They've reanimated
Peter
well,
Cushing.
Maybe I should have gone to see Rogue One. I went and saw Nocturnal Animals last night.
How was that?
The second time I've seen it in a week. Well, oh. I took my wife last night. Big mistake for Ken. Yeah, wife spoke to me for the first time this afternoon around 1.
Oh, she hated it?
She told me 15 minutes into the movie that she picks the next 10 movies. And that she was not. She was not the next 10. And that she was not. That how dare I bring her to a movie
what
like
is,
that?
I've never heard of this
not,
movie.
I have heard
Nocturnal
of it.
Nocturnal Animals. Jake Gyllenhaal, Isla Fisher, Amy Adams. It's a Armie
Wait.
Hammer. It's a powerful cast.
Isla Fisher and Amy Adams can't be in the same movie.
They are.
That's too confusing to me.
They are. They're never in a scene together.
Oh,
okay.
Yes, they're never in a scene together. It's a brilliantly done film. There's a lot of violence. There's a very violent. I don't want to say it because it will. Let's just put it this way. My wife felt violated watching it. Oh, and she told me that if I ever take her to any movie like that ever again, their divorce papers are coming. I mean, it was.
Wow.
It was a very serious.
Okay.
I knew
Julie
I made a very serious
is not
miscalculation.
That crazy. This is very unusual. It must be really bad.
But you saw it.
I liked it.
I thought
it was artistically brilliant. I thought the subject matter was tough. I actually considered purchasing and learning how to shoot a gun after watching the film. I actually thought about this seriously for about a day.
I can have you fill out your FOID card if you want. I've applied for my FOID card.
Yeah, I thought about it. I thought maybe I should actually get firearms training after watching this film.
We'll tell you, after you watch Rogue One, you will also want some firearms training.
You
want
to learn how to fire
one.
A blaster.
A lot of firearms, yeah.
I have heard, though, about Nocturnal Animals that it's really artsy-fartsy.
It is.
Like, super artsy-fartsy. It's directed by Tom Ford, who's a fashion designer.
Yeah, and he wrote the script.
Gucci guy?
He wrote this. Yeah, Tom Ford wrote the script.
Okay, how did you know that, Eric?
There's nothing wrong with that. He gets to know things.
Okay, well, no, but Eric, the former Gucci guy?
Yeah, Tom Ford, the fashion guy. Yeah.
Okay, see this is, by the way, why I'm so struck by this whole Ken not knowing Star Wars ever. Ken is so much more culturally literate than I am,
into
pop culture in so many more ways.
How do you hate Reverend Jesse Jackson? And I don't know why I put those together, but I see him being a big fan of Lando Calrissians. I'm just saying.
Jesse Jackson watches two things, CNN and ESPN. That's it.
He's never watched
any movies?
Oh, I thought
you were going to say CNN and Jesse Jackson.
No, CNN and ESPN. No. Well, at the time I was with him, he did have a show.
Yeah.
And I once made a mistake. I quoted him incorrectly, and he called me. It's 5 o'clock the next morning, and he said, the head of CNN has already called me and told me they're going to have to pull my show because of what you said.
Here's what you need to do, Ken, is read articles like this. Nocturnal Animals caps off Hollywood's year of toxic masculinity.
I wanted to see it with my wife because I wanted to have someone to discuss it with. It affected me so much the first time I saw it. Literally for 24 hours thereafter, I kept thinking about this film, and I honestly thought, and I'm a big anti-gun person, I actually thought, okay, maybe I should, to protect my family, I should actually get a gun and go through the whole training and for safety's purposes. The movie really creeped me out, but it was so brilliantly done, I wanted to watch it again.
I'm just saying, your wife...
Big mistake. Should have taken a cutout of something, of a fake person or something with me if I wanted to take somebody with me, not my wife. Big mistake.
So I now have some black. I don't know if it's blackmail, but now I know if I ever need something from Ken, I'm going to just call him up and say, "Hey, Ken, give me this," or I'm going to call Julie and just say the words "Nocturnal Animals."
Oh boy, it'll get a reaction instantly.
Well, here's my question: you told me 50 minutes into the movie, she said she's picking the next
15.
Oh, 15.
Oh yeah, 15.
So why did she stay?
She wanted to leave, so I got my coat and I said, "Okay, we can leave." But she stayed because the film goes. I'll just say this broadly, so not to ruin it for people. There's a movie within a movie. The movie that's within the movie is the one that was very troubling. The other movie was actually very interesting. They go back and forth. The interweaving of them both. I would recommend people to go see this, but I'm not going to say.
Okay, Ken recommends it. His wife does not.
No, she was troubled and bothered by this. Now, she doesn't like scary movies. And I said to her, it wasn't scary. She said, well, wait a minute. Put a big asterisk by this.
Yeah, just because they're not wearing a mask.
It was a different scary. This wasn't like, like ghosts. But this was scary in a very visceral way. And she's right. It was.
So yeah. Ken gives it two thumbs up and Julie gives it two flip off, two middle fingers.
Oh, yeah. And in need of the groin.
Well, hopefully it'll be safer around here when we come back on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm sharing some pictures with Dave Lundy and our friends in the Allstate Showcase studio of a cat that was rescued by the Anti-Cruelty Society. Here, I'll give you, Ken, you can take a look at these pictures of Sinbad. This is a cat that they rescued, and then you can see some of the shaven pictures of him. But Elliot, tell us a little bit about when somebody is struggling to take care of themselves. They, you know, they don't want to mistreat their pets. And a lot of people were kind of jumping on these posts that the owners should be prosecuted and things like that. But this was an elderly individual who was struggling themselves. And, you know, that nobody wants to mistreat an animal like this.
No, I mean, in cases like this, I know in this specific case, I know this was an unfortunate situation where the person who had this cat wasn't getting a lot of their own support. And we received the call from someone who was going in to take care of some things. And they saw the cat in question. And you know, they knew that this animal needed help. So then when we went there and we spoke with the owner and we saw the animal, the person willingly said, look, this is something that was beyond my control. And again, you kind of have to look at these things with a bit of compassion. The person who had this particular animal wasn't trying to be malicious or cruel. It was just, they were over their heads. And so it's unfortunate to me that it got to this point, because if you look at, if you go to my Facebook page, Elliot Serrano, at Elliot Serrano, facebook.com/Elliot Serrano, Elliot.Serrano, sorry, you'll see the pictures of Sinbad the cat. And if you look at the condition he's in, that's sort of a barometer for how long his owner probably was neglected as well.
Right.
You know, that
good point.
For as long as this cat looks like it was falling into disrepair, the same thing was happening to the animal's owner. So it really makes me sad in knowing that, you know, these two people were getting ignored and neglected here. So when we took in this cat, you know, we of course wanted to make sure that the person in question was also getting the support they needed. And we've been taking care of Sinbad since. And he's a happy cat now. You know, you look at the photos, it looks very disturbing. But just so
no,
you know.
I think a lot of people, I know that I showed the guys the picture at first without showing the before pictures. He looks like a stuffed animal, like something that's created for like a sci-fi or fantasy movie.
He's an animatronic creature. You would think he'd be like in a Star Wars movie that you will never see.
Right.
Yeah, because I'll be waiting to see Nocturnal Animals for the 65th. Time. Wow. By myself.
Wow. But you have a program you guys are initiating at the Anti-Cruelty Society, reaching out to individuals, the Friends of...
Friends Who Care.
Friends Who Care.
It's a program. We just got a grant for it, where we want to provide just some basic support for seniors who have pets. We're getting supplies together. We are going to be sending them their pet food and other types of supplies with their meals that they would get through the Meals on Wheels program. That's through the Department on Aging. We're partnering with them on that.
Mm-hmm. Where can folks find out more about that? That sounds really cool.
Isn't that great?
Oh, yeah, if you want, give me a call at the Anti-Cruelty Society. We're always looking for supplies, pet food, pet supplies, beds. We're getting requests from seniors for doggy booties and different types of just different supplies, pet beds and things like that. And then what we're doing over this next month is getting all the information from the surveys we received from the Department on Aging and going, you know, I've been talking to seniors all this month about the things that they need. So, you know, getting all the lists together, what these folks need, where they are, and then, you know, just sending it out. And it's all because, you know, we feel that if you want to help animals, you got to help the people who have those pets as well. And seniors especially, because I think we're finding out, you know, we're kind of ignoring, you know, our aging population in a lot of cases, and they do need support.
Well, and part of independence, you know, staying in your own home and having your pet is reinforced by that. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone lives a longer, happier life with an animal in their home. It's proven.
Yeah,
and people would probably take care of their animal before they take care of themselves.
Exactly.
So I have a close friend who lives out of range of this station. He's on the East Coast in Connecticut. He's going through a rough time, and if it wasn't for his dog, I would be very worried.
Right.
I mean, the dog is keeping him alive.
Right.
I mean, he's doing everything, and he said if it wasn't for her, I don't think I'd be here. You know, he's really depressed, but the dog is just—it's such an important part of his life.
And these animals, we know studies have shown that, yes, they do help. They help folks, especially as you're older, helps you keep from living a sedentary life.
Yeah. Right.
They've been shown to help reduce blood pressure, relieve stress.
Yeah,
I mean, provide comfort and companionship. I mean, yeah, and a lot of these seniors that I talk to, they'd say they want so much to be able to provide the best for their pets because these pets are, like as you say, it's their lifeline. They're living for those animals right now. So
that and a little bit of entertainment. I mean, the things that amuse the cats or dogs sometimes is just amazing.
I know.
It's pretty funny.
Well, especially at Christmas time. I mean, like, you give a cat a box and some wrapping paper, and they are just having a good time. Pepper, I mean, Monty goes nuts. We have a Lhasa Apso mix. Lhasa Apso Maltese mix, mm-hmm. and he just goes crazy with all the packages and just all the new smells.
He loves cardboard.
He does love cardboard.
Yeah, he got a hold of a few cardboard boxes that I watched him. Yeah. Oh, that was fine. I just started leaving cardboard for him out after that. But no, he didn't want it then.
Not when you give it to him.
Not when you give it to me.
Not when it's only when it's off limits. That's right. More exciting, man.
Is it a he?
Monty's my dog. Yeah.
That's obviously a he.
Yes.
Do they watch television?
Cat and the dog? I don't know if Monty watches television.
I know one thing. I've heard cats hate when Donald Trump appears on television.
Oh, come on.
Go on YouTube. Cats watching Trump. Watch.
Wait, what? Okay, yes. As we go to the news. Am I going to the news? Let me, is it cats watching Trump
cats watching
on YouTube?
Trump on TV. Yes, okay. Watch the YouTube channel. You'll see.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me tonight as our sidecar for the show is Elliot Serrano. Have we had sidecars as a cocktail on the show before?
Oh, no.
Oh, we need to get a bartender in here. Yeah. They're very tasty. Elliot is our chief geek officer. He also is the manager of education at the Anti-Cruelty Society. And again, the website, if people want to get involved, make donations.
Anti-cruelty.org, anti-cruelty.org, no hyphen. And you can make donations. There are a lot of different programs. If we have a lot of students who want to get into volunteering. And our new after-school program is starting in the spring.
Oh, my daughter would love that. We can't have animals at this point because I am extremely allergic. I've been going through shots for a year and a half. To get rid of my dog and cat allergies.
Really?
Oh, I thought you were...
No, not those shots. I've actually progressed quite a bit. And I'm hopeful that when I'm through with this with 2 year regimen that we might be able to actually have a pet.
Well, my husband Steve was very allergic to cats, and I had two cats when we started dating, and he had to go every month to get shots.
I had to go twice a week.
Yeah. Oh. What?
For 36 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they have new way of doing this now, and
is
then
this
you
so
go
that your
once,
daughter can have a
then
pet.
Then I go someday? Once a month. I'm doing it for her, yeah.
Oh,
and she loves the and she always daddy, you know, she's excited about daddy getting shots. And
so she can have a dog.
Yeah, or a cat, and she just loves. We've gone to the Anti-Cruelty Society a couple of times, and I know she'd love to get involved. She'll be 7 next week, December 28th. So we'll do something. We'll see you over there.
I will say we have a weekend program. It's called Kids Who Care. Everything's we care, do things where for kids just her age, where she gets to come in, do some activities, a little project to help get an animal adopted. And we let them feed our small mammals, our rabbits and guinea pigs. And they even get to go into the cage-free room and read to the cats.
She would love that. She would absolutely love that.
I love that idea.
That's a great program. Yeah. No. So you'll see us there. We'll be there, and hopefully everyone listening in this area will do that in their local neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
We'll get involved with their own local anti-cruelty
societies.
You come
down, and while your daughter's doing the programs, you and I are going to watch Star Wars.
Absolutely. We'll watch Star Wars.
I think you need to do watching Star Wars with cats.
Star Wars with cats.
I think that would be great.
And we can talk about Hope Hicks.
Hope Hicks
is my personal favorite to hopefully be named by Donald Trump as press secretary.
Nice. Well done. Nice way of bringing it back around.
If Trump names her as press secretary, and I don't think it's going to happen.
Hope Hicks?
I can guarantee you that if she was the campaign's press secretary.
Okay.
That was never seen. But she was the director of communications.
What was Kelly Conway? She was the campaign manager.
But Hope Hicks.
There are the air quotes again.
Sorry. She wasn't really a campaign manager. She wanted the title, but she was a spokesperson. You cannot be a campaign manager and spend that much time on television.
No, you can't be. David is exactly correct. But she is the press secretary still for the Trump campaign and for the transition. You never see her because that's her style. But I can guarantee you.
That's a creepy smile she's got.
I guarantee you, if she is named press secretary, it will be must-watch TV for every single male in the United States and in North America. She was at age 11. She was a Ralph Lauren model. She's from the relatively downtrodden community of Greenwich, Connecticut. She's 27. And,
wow.
27. And she was mentioned initially as a potential press secretary. I have not seen that recently. And I think Trump she'll probably do something else in the press with the press department.
Well, and obviously
get some experience. But he named her in December, I think it was in January 2015, as his campaign's press secretary. But you never saw her. You saw these other people on CNN and everything else. You never saw her ever.
And she's been with the Trump organization since 2014, and that's before.
Yeah, she went to work apparently for a PR agency that had the Ivanka Trump brand, and she started working with her, and then was recruited by the Trump organization and went to the Trump organization. And it's understandable, knowing Donald and what Donald tends to like, that he would name her his press secretary.
Well, it's all about aesthetics.
And the press secretary is obviously about making sure that the message of the White House is controlled, right? Whatever they want to have.
You really do need a seasoned person who knows
what I'm wondering about. And I don't know what her experience is aside from working for the Trump organization.
She's never had political experience until January 2015 when Trump put her in charge of
it. Well, it's the same with Katrina Pearson. Katrina Pearson, who was the other press person that he had, who was on TV all the time,
who was terrible,
who was oh my god bad,
oh my god bad. I used to have that job for somebody.
Yeah, well,
we all have done this, and I used to watch her and go, how is it even possible that she survives a day?
Right,
just a day.
Well, it just demonstrated his contempt for the press.
Well, and nothing is surprising.
He would put this woman out there on a constant basis.
Well, but I mean, he's had a few people, right? Sean Spicer from RNC.
Who probably is going to be the press secretary.
Jason Miller. He's an adult and, has been, dealing with the press since he won.
Can I just say something? The fact that you have to say that someone's an adult just sort of highlights the fact that there are other people who are not. I mean,
I guess what I would say is because he's a little bit more seasoned. So maybe that's a better way of saying it.
No, I think even from your point of view, saying that someone's an adult, there has to be an adult somewhere in this collection of human beings that are.
But I think with Hicks is basically, she's younger. She's not.
Does not have political experience. And apparently one of the things she does is Trump dictates his tweets to her. And her job is to then disseminate those to the person who actually puts the tweets out.
Oh, so he did. He's not the one that misspelled unprecedented.
Don't know. We don't. I think that the misspellings are the ones he does himself.
For someone who likes the word sycophant, I'm guessing that
unprecedented. Look, I try. I honestly.
P-R-E-C.
I try to restrain my contempt for the anti-intellectualism of Donald Trump.
So I
really try to, frankly, there's so much crazy stuff out there. Unprecedented. Mm-hmm. It's just like so not even on my radar.
The gentleman who called us earlier.
Rich.
Rich.
Who was driving a truck?
Yeah.
Yes.
I share his anxiety. He's appointed adults to the cabinet, not the people I would have appointed.
Well, one of the people you want to talk about, I'm sorry, I don't want to cut you off.
No, I was just saying not the people I would have appointed, but elections have consequences and he's gone in that direction. And they may have consequences for him because I'm surprised with some of his appointments because they seem antithetical to a to the message that he had during the campaign about jobs and
Everything is antithetical. He's not gonna try to put her in jail.
It's not really a wall.
They're not really gonna pay for it. I didn't really mean that. That was just a campaign thing.
But
during
one of the
swamp was a sort of figure of speech.
Right. Yeah. Newt Gingrich said, "Yeah, well, that was cute, but that was then. We're not really gonna talk about that now.
Right.
But
we're gonna drain the swamp.
But the
and
interesting
refill
one,
the
though,
contents.
The one that's gonna have the most consequences is the repeal of Obamacare, because everybody's like, oh, we hate Obamacare. Obamacare is awful. The poll came out today that said that Barack Obama's greatest accomplishment, 24% said Obamacare. Obama's biggest failure, 27% said Obamacare. But once again, if you actually poll the components of Obamacare, people love it.
Well, and they're
they
doing
absolutely
some,
love
right,
it.
And
so when they're actually going to repeal it, people are going to find out, oh, my God, you were serious about that.
If I were so inclined, to want AACA repealed, the Affordable Care Act repealed, I would be very concerned about the approach that appears to be the predominant view, which is repeal and then replace. It's the and then that worries me.
Right. Because, well, the delay, they say, could be incredibly costly to everyone.
Well, it would be grandfathered for a few years. But it doesn't matter, because if you repeal it, what are they going to replace it with?
Right.
This is not easy to do.
And what would and
this
if they
complex.
Say
complex.
And because here's something I don't understand, and maybe someone could help me out with this when it comes to the healthcare providers and the insurers, because they are pulling out. They pulled out of a lot of programs in the state of Illinois. I believe United
all over
Healthcare.
The states,
yeah,
I mean, a number
and all
of
the
co-ops
country.
Have been shut down across
why
the
is
country.
There, why is there no impediment to that? Why is there no
because
block?
Because the feds are not coming in and bailing out these state co-ops.
Actually, it's actually yes, but Congress specifically forbade using some of this money to bail out some of these co-ops. So there were funds that were supposed to have been available, but there was a problem with the legislation. And because Congress has refused since passing Obamacare to do anything to fix Obamacare or to, you know, normally in a bill, in Illinois we have trailer bills. The trailer bill comes and it when you do things like hypothetically pass a piece of legislation that's going to affect every man, woman, child, and business in the state of Illinois in terms of their energy system, and you pass it in 24 hours, and it's 505 pages long, you don't necessarily know what's in the bill. So you
heard a lot of during Obamacare when they were passing
right.
that. We don't know what's in it. But
Obamacare, the bill was out there for a long time. But even when it's out there for a long time, you got to have a cleanup bill.
But even
we
even
did this with
Leader
Medicare
Pelosi
Part D.
Said, she wasn't going to be able to know what was in it until after it was passed, and
yeah,
she was able to
read
it.
Yeah, but that's not really the point. The point is that this happened with Medicare Part D under the Bush administration.
Meaning it's not the only time it's ever happened.
And Democrats came in and worked with Republicans to pass a bill that fixed the problems of Medicare Part D, and they made it a functioning program. Whereas what Republicans have done since Obamacare passed is they have said, we will not lift a finger to do anything other than repeal it, period, full stop,
which is
why they've done
it
70 times. Exactly.
So this goes back to my original question. It's a broader part of this, which is if we do a repeal and delay, what's to prevent all the insurance companies go, well, then screw it, we're out. Everybody who's covered by this
is
done.
Why I think as a legislator, right, if I were a congressperson, I would be concerned about voting to repeal without knowing exactly what is going to replace. I'd want a seamless transition because I don't want to get out there holding a bag. I'm up for re-election every 2 years. I just voted to repeal. We ain't got nothing to replace it.
Yeah.
People are screaming because even those like people in sitting right here in this room who are covered on employer health insurance, it will affect us.
Yes.
For example, lifetime caps. Guess what? They were eliminated. Not anymore. They'll be back. So we will all be affected by lifetime
caps. By the repeal, right.
Yeah. So this is a serious thing. And I'm not sure when people actually think about what they're doing that they're going to be able to pull this off. Because there's no way I would, knowing how dysfunctional Congress is, there's no way I would vote to repeal something like this.
My biggest concern in all this, because this goes all the way back, I mean, and I'm sure before the 90s even, trying to control the costs of escalating health care, right, is the insurance companies, because we know there's no truth in billing, right? Doctors bill what they then know is going to be negotiated with the health the health insurance provider. And so we look at these bills and you're like, really? $10,000 for something that Tylenol costs $120 to be given in a hospital. And I get it. You know, it has to be the nurse, it has to be insured, but then that's negotiated down to $5. Well, right. Then why was it initially charged at $125?
And some people are not paying the $5. Some people are paying lot more.
Right.
I mean, I had a colonoscopy. I'm over 50. I had a colonoscopy. And I was stunned at the size of the bill. I mean, it was like many, many thousands of dollars.
Right.
Go through life-threatening cancer treatments like
right.
I did.
Yeah. Exactly.
I received a shot every time I had a chemo cycle, I received a shot to boost up my white blood cell count, to make sure I wouldn't die walking down the street.
Sure.
With somebody sneezed on the other side of the street. And I, you know, literally,
to boost
your immune system. The shot cost $18,000.
Yeah.
One shot.
Yeah, there was a wow. shot from my dad that was $1,000. Same thing. My father had small cell lung cancer, and they were like, and they said the insurance company wouldn't cover it because it was considered preventative rather than treatment. And they said, and I said, well, if he doesn't get this, he'll need a blood transfusion. And they said, yes, we will cover that.
Unbelievable.
And you're like, okay, so you're going to cover the thing that's going to cost $100,000, and you're not going to cover the thing that will cost $1,000 to avoid the $99,000 additional cost.
Yes.
And in the meantime, he's the one who suffers.
Right.
Something he could avoid.
Which is why when people start talking about death panels,
right?
This was something that came up during the Obamacare and the ACA. It was that, you know, the people are going to decide.
Sarah Palin called them death panels.
Right. Well, that's been there. I got a phone call from the surgeon. My father also had an aortic aneurysm that was growing, and they said they gave me the number. They said that my father's surgery would cost $40,000, and they didn't feel that it was worth charging that cost. So I'm sitting on the phone. I'm like, so you're saying if I had more money, if I had $40,000, I could pay for my father's life? That, I mean, they had decided, the insurance company had decided they're not going to help him because.
But this is the mockery.
To me, it's a death panel.
This is the mockery that the health care and health insurance debate has been since the 90s, since the Harry and Louise ads in the 90s, because they say, well, don't let the government, government bureaucrat get in the way of between you and your doctor. It's like, the health insurance company has been between you and your doctor for decades.
Right.
Yeah. That has not changed. And that basically, frankly, was one of the fundamental flaws of Obamacare that can't be fixed, which is the idea that you have to preserve the private insurance market. And I'm not for single payer system without a private insurance option to supplement. But the idea that you do not have that we're all supposed to pretend we haven't had to may have these fights with these health insurance companies on a constant basis to make sure care is proper. It's endless. And frankly, the experiences that I've had in dealing with my parents and particularly my dad's care when he suffered for 7 years. The arguments with Medicare were infinitely easier than the arguments with the private insurance companies.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
It was easier.
Well, to go back to the point Dave Lundy was making earlier, and Eric also, I think, second, there's a great book, Senator Ted Kennedy's memoirs, in which he talks about the phases of great legislation and what a bill has to go through, what an idea has to go through to become an effective piece of legislation. And we're...
Are we ever going to see that again? Are we ever going to see effective legislation again?
Well, we're at phase three of the Affordable Care Act, and Congress has failed. And phase three is phase one is all the times you keep trying and trying, but each time you move a little bit further, you affect public opinion, then you get it passed. Now we're in a phase where it's up to Congress to go back. We now know the problems and fix it. Congress hasn't done it because the Republicans have refused to do it. So Congress has failed. And if you go back to, and Kennedy has all kinds of examples of major legislation, path-breaking legislation, who went through these phases and what Congress did to fix the original piece of legislation that made it effective. People complain about the AACA. Well, of course, because Congress hasn't fixed the problems. There's all kinds of problems we now know that are out there. Go fix them.
Republicans have refused. They have refused to fix any of the obvious problems with the legislation. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and defend the ACA as it is and say it's a perfect piece of legislation. It's not. There are all kinds of issues.
There are problems galore, but Congress needs to do its job.
But it's 18% of the U.S. economy. Of course there are going to be problems when you try to deal with
it. I just don't – again, I go back to, I don't understand how the insurance companies have been – they seem to have been able to run wild, whether it's because under ACA, but before that, for the last 30 years.
But at least under ACA, there are some, you know, literally billions and billions of dollars every year is returned to premium payers, to customers of the health insurance companies because of the ACA that said you can only make so much money from your, so much of your premium has to be used for health services and you can't have excessive profits. And that has caught insurance companies over and over and over again. It's one of the things insurance companies hate. They want to make the excess profits.
Yeah, but they're, the job of insurance companies is to what is the job of the insurance company is to coordinate, right? I guess,
yeah,
right. So the healthcare industry, there has to be another way to do this,
yes.
And I don't think we're going to get there anytime soon.
And we, the American people, are the losers in this thing.
Absolutely,
as it always is.
And that's the thing, is what you want at the end of the day is for your family to be safe and healthy. And we're not, no one feels that way. And that's where we are, I think.
And so my message, getting back to what started this conversation, was if you are a congressman in Washington and your party is moving down a repeal and replace path, I'd be very nervous. Because without knowing what the replace is, I'd be very nervous. Because a lot of, as Dave mentioned, a lot of the individual component parts, people love. They love the elimination of lifetime caps. They love the fact that you can no longer be denied insurance because of
pre-existing conditions.
I mean, I'm uninsurable, literally, because of the caps and because of the fact that I've had cancer. I'm pretty much uninsurable.
If I don't go to a break, I won't be insurable. More to this on 720 WGN.